listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
All right, today's episode is brought to you by Ting. So visit bcs.ting.com, BCS for The Brian Callen Show, .ting.com. For a $25 service credit or device discount. You know, the thing is, when you start getting a popular podcast, people come and say, we want to sponsor it. But for me, you know, I've got to believe in the product. I just have to. I know about Ting from Joe Rogan, who I believe uses the service. I've heard nothing but good things. Let me explain to you why Ting is a good and responsible product. And this is why I'm actually promoting them on The Brian Callen Show. There are no contracts, okay? There are no bundling or ride-along services, no overage charges, no penalties. You get credits for unused service. There are no add-on charges, no mysterious line items on your bill. Unlimited devices on one plan is great. It's got a powerful online account control panel, okay? So you can do all kinds of stuff online. And there's no hold customer support. How's that sound, huh? You don't hold, okay? So having said all that, the bottom line is it's a pay-as-you-go service. The service is basically a la carte to your needs. When you don't want the service anymore, you can get out, all right? That's what I call a responsible, ethical company. And I first learned about it through Joe Rogan doing his podcast, and I'm proud they're sponsoring this podcast now. You know, that's kind of my pitch for Ting. I think it's a very good company. As soon as they get it paired up with the iPhone 5, I am going to switch over. I like it. It sounds like a great service. So let me once again encourage you to visit bcs.ting.com, and you'll get a $25 service credit or device discount.
Okay, everybody. Brian Callen Show. Right now, I have the person I would call the Prince of New York. The Prince of New York. You've heard me talk about him on the Joe Rogan podcast. You've heard Joe Rogan talk about him. One of the more original people in my life. And my best friend, Mr. Jim Burke. Mr. Jim.
Thank you, my Bubba.
Jibs and Jabs Burke.
Thank you. That was my grandfather's nickname. He was a professional boxer. He fought for the lightweight championship. He was from Port Jervis, and he was a lanky fellow, a lot like me, even skinnier. And he was known as Jibs and Jabs Burke, and he's in the Boxing Hall of Fame in Brooklyn.
And so is your Uncle Artie. Tell us a little bit about, because I think when he died, on page 6, someone wrote that the last tough guy of New York.
Yeah, that.
Because, you know, we were talking about how much New York has changed. Mm-hmm. New York used to be neighborhoods, and they were separated by some fairly strong ethnic cultural lines. Irish neighborhoods, Italian neighborhoods, Puerto Rican neighborhoods,
absolutely.
Black neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And now New York is where all foreign money comes, and it's basically a European city.
Mm.
And it's very safe.
It's very safe. It, you know, 8th Avenue used to be really dirty. And
that's where I mean 8th Avenue in that
yeah,
area was
Times
where,
Square
was where the yeah. where the White Hand Gang and all those guys and Mickey Featherstone and the who are those guys the Irish
well
mob,
that's the Westies
yeah.
and
those
I lived
guys
on
ran
the,
that
yeah
area.
I, yeah I lived on the West Side for a while on 54th Street, and they were bad guys. As a matter of fact, the mob would go out and hire those guys
to do the dirty work.
Yeah. To do a lot of wet work for them. Wet work in the parlance of the mafias. Or not even just the parlance of the mafia. It's just known, you know, wet work is known as killing. You know, you're doing the wet work. I mean, I know the government uses that too. But Jimmy Coonan, I forget
Mickey
the other.
Featherstone.
Mickey Featherstone were bad guys. They were into drugs, heavily drinking. They were just whacked.
Yeah,
they were whacked guys.
Rough
I mean,
guys.
Yeah. You know, Mickey Featherstone had been in Vietnam War.
Your Uncle Artie kind of floated between the two gangs, didn't he? I mean, the Italians and the Irish.
Yeah, he, you know, he was a dock worker. He was a solo guy. He ran in many circles. He was just a legitimate tough guy, high noon tough guy. He didn't need gangs.
Yeah.
He broke up gangs. He gangs beat him up, and he would wait for them one by one.
He did that. And I remember his son telling me that he'd wake up and he'd be shaving and he'd like go
very early in the morning.
And he'd wait at their houses.
Yeah, catch guys, walking out of their brownstone or their little apartments, whatever, and waiting for them to go to work. To beat the shit out of them and get them one by one.
That's a dude. That's a very rare guy.
He's a badass. Yeah. I mean, you look at UFC guys, and I have the utmost respect for those guys. They know how to fight.
Yeah.
But he had 3,000 fights outside the octagon, outside the ring. I mean, he had over 100. He had 150 fights in the ring.
Yeah. Legit boxer.
Legit. Three-time Golden Glove champ. Also was a lightweight champion of the U.S. Army during World War II.
When everybody boxed.
When everybody boxed and everybody was in the Army.
Jesus.
The reason he didn't become a pro was because he was, shot and badly injured. And
he spent how many years in the hospital?
He spent like 3 years in a VA, recuperating. Came out a badass.
Angry.
And, but handsome and, a little bit, a lot of the devil may care attitude and, didn't have a high school education, but was a pretty street savvy guy.
Well, he
used to call me college when I worked with him on the docks.
Called me college.
He loved me. He was very good to me, but a very bad guy.
He's a bad guy.
Bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's your dad told me about him. Killed guys. He was one of those guys.
Well, he killed German. He was, I'll say this, he was the most trained person that I've ever met, meaning that from a young child, his dad, who was a professional boxer, taught him how to fight and defend himself from a very young lad so that he was an expert hand-to-hand. Then he went into the Army.
Irish,
and then our government trained him how to kill, and he killed. And then put a guy like that back on the street, and, he would go and, he was a union buster. He would go in and bust up unions for the mob, and then said, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a union man, and I'm going to fuck up those guys. And so, he was a dangerous guy.
Well, didn't he have to have a sit down with Carmine the Snake?
Yes, he did. He fucked up one of his lieutenants, and he had to have a sit down. And basically, as I remember him retelling it, the guy said to him, and he was in the room having a sit down with Carmine and his fellow lieutenants, and he said, Artie, that was my uncle's name, Artie. He said, Artie, we don't fight with hands anymore. What are you doing? You can't beat the shit out of one of my guys. You can't do that.
But he liked him. He liked him because he had a lot of balls.
But he had a lot of balls, and he said, you can't do that. Now, of course, my uncle was no fool. He was packing a gun and a blackjack up until the day he died. He was always packing a pistol and a blackjack.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's a guy worrying about his old enemies. A lot of times, that's what happens.
And new enemies and guys that might cut in front of him online at the Bohacks, and he'd wait outside for him, have a few words for him, and he might be in his late 70s, and it might be a young punk.
Yeah.
And what that guy doesn't know is he's gonna get a blackjack to the side of the head.
Yeah.
Blackjack
is so old fashioned. I've never even seen a blackjack.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I have a blackjack at home.
Carrying a blackjack.
A blackjack. And they're highly effective. I mean, he showed me his blackjack. Oh, my God. Well, it was a piece of leather encased. It was a piece of lead encased in. No, a thick piece of leather like the size of my thumb, not very big. A piece of lead the size of my thumb encased in leather. And it was very kind of springy on the end of a kind of a springy leather case.
Oh.
So it had this whipping action.
Oh.
So you would barely see it hanging from a guy's hand. And he would just, and being a boxer, he would just very loosely just swing that, and you'd get clocked with a piece of lead across your face or your forehead. It's over. One shot. He'll break your eye lobe, your occipital lobe, or your jaw, and he doesn't have to fuck up his hand.
Yeah.
Blackjacks are highly effective. I mean, so are knives and guns.
So are, I was going to say, it's funny how
so are knives and guns.
Like how how a knife, like the mean streets of New York back in the day. You got stabbed in a bar, man.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not much I don't give a fuck what you're going to do with your
fists.
You're
just a balloon with blood.
That's,
you know?
That's what,
you just get
I gutted a deer, I can tell you that, man. That deer spilled out all over, so it really gave me a fear of respect.
Poor deer. And
the poor
deer. Did you run him down and stab him? Did you run? Did you jump out of a tree?
I know on the show it looks like I shot him, but I ran him down.
Did you carry the knife in your mouth?
You are now 50 years old.
I am 51.
You're 51. You are, you've always been an atheist.
Yeah. I think I made that declaration when I was 15.
Really?
Yeah. When I was 15.
Do you remember what made you say that? And then
experiencing death, at an early age of, family members and I went to a lot of wakes when I was young, and I realized, wait a minute, these people are dead, they're cold, they're gone, and they ain't going to know afterlife. They're gone. They've lived their life.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, death totally gave me an appreciation of life, and I went, wow, you got to live one day at a time. You got to live each day, be in each moment. It made me very zen.
Well, you know, that's something that I'm really been working on a lot. I've been working
on it. It takes work,
Bubba. When people say live in the moment, I have a definition for it for young people listening. Living in the moment is actually just making sure you shut your brain off to stories that don't help you.
Mm-hmm. And distractions.
We attach stories to everything. We attach feelings, attitudes, and things to whatever we're going through. So if I'm tired, we have a whole story around being tired. I'm the kind of guy that needs sleep. No. Just
me too.
Just feel it, man. Feel it. Feel what's going on and be in the moment. And it's just energy. Fatigue is a type of energy. And that's something that I think is so valuable as you get older. Just learning how to be here now, right now. It's not even about focus. We use the wrong words for things like concentrate. They sound so active. They sound so aggressive when in fact they're actually rather passive. They're just letting go. I'm quoting right now Elliot Hulse, who's this.
I thought you were quoting me.
I am. For you guys, I'm going to have Elliot on my podcast soon, but he's a strength coach and really kind of, I think, deals with human strength, you know, and kind of how to be the strongest person you can be, not just physically, but mentally. I got all these YouTube videos and I found myself watching all of them. He's fantastic. So Elliot Hulse, if you want to know about deadlift, how to put on weight, how to lose weight. I mean, this guy knows everything. Anyway. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're 51. There are a lot of young people that listen to this podcast and, you know, what would you say? I mean, when you say you're an atheist, it's interesting because what's his name? Sendak? Clarice Sendak? Mm-hmm. The guy who wrote...
He just passed away.
Yeah. And he said something really wise because you believe in God. And he said, no, I don't believe in God. The war took care of that. And he kept talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go, geez, man. He just said it like that. He goes, no, the war took care of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't believe in God.
You know,
you stop and you go, man, you know, those experiences either make you believe more or they make you believe...
Right.
Yeah. They destroy your faith.
Right. I don't think my uncle, I don't think my uncle, he would be respectful of kind of the church and, you know, Christianity and Catholicism. But I don't think he had much time for it. Actually, you know what? My mom and dad really don't have much use for it either, even though I went to a Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school, Catholic university, you know, just...
Well, those schools are.
They're good schools.
Schools are good because they
good education.
Catholic way of life is also has a value in that it's got
good Jesuit education
for how to live your life.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Respect
for your elders and waking up early. All those things. You know,
absolutely.
That you utilize.
Yeah.
For your life, but then when you say that Christ is the Messiah or whatever, I mean, now you're dealing in something called faith.
Well just do a little bit. Kids, everybody's indoctrinated to a certain extent. I've been indoctrinated. You've been indoctrinated. Depends on how you're indoctrinated. But I remember taking a course in high school called thanatology. Now, thanatology is the study of death. And once you really start to study death and history, you understand where religion comes from. You understand why it's been invented, why And it, religion has been invented. All these religions are invented. You know, God didn't bestow it. There is no God. There is no, God didn't make the universe. I mean, come on.
Certainly not the God that anthropomorphize, right?
Exactly.
I like the Hebrew notion of God is like the, you know, the devout Hebrews will, or, you know, devout Jews, rabbis, won't ever mention God. They won't even say Yahweh because God is not measurable. There's mm-hmm. no way to put him into context. Mm-hmm. There's no way to paint him, to speak his name even, mm-hmm. because that would be to define him, right. and you could never do it. Right. Kind of a neat way of looking at, right. you know.
Don't religion. The Muslims do that with their
they do.
Prophet?
I mean, well, yeah. But remember, Christianity and Islam come from
yeah.
Judaism, right. Day. I mean,
Judeo-Christian.
What's amazing about the yeah. fact that the Jews and the Muslims don't get along that well is the fact that the Quran essentially upholds everything in the Old Testament.
Hmm.
It is a holy book to mm-hmm. the Muslims. I think that the difference is that Islam and Muhammad, according to the Muslims, was the last person to actually speak to God. And in fact, Muhammad wasn't spoken to Muhammad. The angel Gabriel spoke to Muhammad through
God. Archangel Gabriel.
You know? Yeah. Anyway.
Gabriel, come blow your
horn.
That's
how he wrote the Quran, which took him 7 years, all that stuff. But I don't think about religion much, man. I just don't. I never do.
No.
I guess, you know, I just try to live my life. My religion is just listening to my inner compass, listening to what is in my heart, mm-hmm. listening to what I'm supposed to do anyway.
Right.
And that always kind of is, seems to be my guiding. It doesn't steer me wrong, man.
It's a good guide. I recommend to your young audience to read about Robert Ingersoll. He was one of the original free thinkers in the United States back in the 1800s. And he was, you know, he would always say he was an agnostic, but agnostics, really, if you look it up, agnosticism is the same as atheism, really. So I know a lot of people like to make a differentiate.
Well, an agnostic would also say, I don't know if there's
yeah, therefore,
a God.
Therefore, I won't say that there isn't.
Right.
But if you really, you know, hold their feet to the fire, yeah. there is, you know. Anyway, he was one of the first great atheists in the United States, and also a champion of women's rights, an abolitionist, you know, totally against slavery. You know, he was a devotee of Paine and Paine's writings.
Thomas Paine.
And
doesn't
so
get his due.
That does not get his due in American history. And I recommend that you read both of those guys and hear what they have to say, what Paine has to say. Ingersoll.
Well, Tom Paine was really kept out of the American American royalty, the mm-hmm. founding father. You never really heard about Tom Paine when you talked about the founding fathers, because Tom Paine was basically an atheist and very critical, even ridiculed the Christian religion.
Sure.
In what book was it? Anyway, it was a book.
Common Sense?
No. It wasn't Common Sense.
Conflict?
It wasn't Common Sense. It was his other book, which is famous. Give me my phone and I'll look it up now. But, you know, he was his books had a profound effect.
Oh, I know what it was. It was called I Hate Stupid Christians.
No, man. Come on, man.
I don't hate Christians, by the way.
No.
I don't hate anybody, by the way.
No. That's yeah.
I love is my religion.
Well, don't be too, you know, weird, all right? Or I'll have to smack you in the mouth.
Love is my religion.
Oh, that's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's Common Sense.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Paine and Revolutionary America. Let's see here. You know, these guys were in their 30s.
So enlightened, so well read.
They were trying to change the world, man. Yeah. That's where you know, that's where ambition and imagination and, you know, one of the things that this historian said is history is the study of surprises
mm-hmm.
and the study of conflict. And it's true. You know, it really is. He wrote The American Crisis. Yeah. And he wrote The Rights of Man.
That's what I was thinking. Crisis, not conflict.
He got deeply involved in the French Revolution. he almost got actually had his head cut off.
They threw him in jail. Our government actually stepped up and saved him.
Yeah. But
and brought him back.
And then, oh, of course, he became notorious because of The Age of Reason. That's the book.
The Age of Reason.
His book that advocates deism, promotes reason and free thinking, and argues against institutionalized religion in general and Christian doctrine in particular.
And by the way, you can download all of these for free. They are free.
Yeah, that's download true. Them. You can download all those books, and I always recommend it to people.
Yeah.
In The Age of Reason, when you say someone's a deist, guys, that's exactly what Thomas Jefferson was, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what George Washington was. And what a deist really is, most of the founding fathers were either atheist or deist. What that deist is, somebody says, well, I think that there's a grand design. I think somebody, some great force, whether it was God, let's just call him God for better, created the world and then just left it spinning, left it alone, and let things happen as they would. You know, and I think that's a valuable philosophy because it forces you to take personal responsibility for not only the position you're in, but also it forces you to take responsibility for the position you are put in. Things happen to us, good and bad, and how you react to those things is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Don't spend time saying, why me?
Yeah.
Spend time saying, how can I use this circumstance to get better
Absolutely.
As a person?
I heard something the other day that Susie, my girlfriend, told me. I heard her saying it to someone else. And she said, well, just take the next right action. And I thought, wow, I wish that's actually what NRA actually did stand for.
What?
Next right action. Well, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do. Well, just take the next right action.
Yeah.
And nobody can tell you what to do. It's up to you.
Well, that's that great sort of that Socrates talked about. There's ignorance and then there's wisdom. There's ignorance on one side of the spectrum. There's wisdom on the other. And you're not supposed to have wisdom when you're a young person. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of effort. But you can have something called correct opinion.
Yeah.
You can have something called right action. You can have something where you know the difference. You know that child abuse is wrong. I don't have to write a dissertation on it.
Right.
You know kicking a dog in the ribs when it's eating or something is wrong.
Unless it's eating your homework.
That's right. So that is where... You know, don't know how to. It's like that great when they had the argument about obscenity and nudity and pornography. He said, I don't know how to describe pornography, but I know it when I see it. That was a great Supreme Court justice quote. And I can't remember who said it, but he said it sometime in the 80s. But it's a great thing. I don't know how to describe pornography. I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. You know.
Yeah.
I love those kinds of things. I love. Who was it? Oh, fuck. Einhart, I think. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But when he described God, he goes, I've never really spoken to God. I have heard him clear his throat in the background. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
That reminds me of the drunk that falls out of the second story window. He's so drunk, he just falls out of the second story window. Bang, hits the ground. Passerby says, oh my God, what happened? The drunk says, I don't know. I just got here.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, that's a metaphor for God. I don't know. I just got here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just got here.
Well, that's a really good metaphor for God, actually. That's a really fucking good point because you don't know.
You don't know. I don't know. I just got here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in every situation you're in, I don't know. I just got here.
Yeah.
And it keeps you humble.
It keeps you humble. It's also like, it's interesting. Like, if you start thinking deeply about what the fuck I'm doing here, like, what is this and what does this mean?
It can be overwhelming.
It's pretty overwhelming.
It can be overwhelming.
You know, I don't do it.
Yeah.
Again, that's another thing I don't indulge in. I don't bother thinking about stuff that I have,
and you have no answer.
It's not going to have an outcome that and there's no answer. It's just not going to help me.
You can make up an answer, or you can decide, well, I'm here to, you know, solve world hunger, or I'm here, and that's great.
But that's the point. There does seem to be, if you listen to all the great wisdoms, you know, all the people, there is always a moral code and language around morality, the importance of morality and ethics, and how important that is, and why it's important to help other people, why it's important not to be destructive and negative. So I think human beings, whatever we're doing on this earth, there is clearly a direction.
We're all in it together.
And there's a direction humanity seems to be moving in, or at least being nudged in. And that's something that's interesting to me. That's this moral sense we have, an innate moral sense that human beings have. My question then always becomes, to what end? You know, we were talking about this, you know, Ido Portal, that guy you had me.
Yes.
And he said something really interesting. He's a sort of an acrobat and does all this incredible stuff with his body. He said, movement, you know, just if you go lift weights or whatever, what are you doing that for?
Mm-hmm.
What is your body, this incredible elastic machine that can do incredible things if you train it to do so? Why are you doing that? Have a reason. Mm-hmm. What is it? Move because you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Move for the sake of movement and because you can. And by the way, because I would add something else, because some people can't.
Absolutely, you appreciate it.
Yeah, but what brought me to what we were talking about is, like, you know, motivating yourself. You know, we were talking about Tom Cruise. I don't know what motivates the guy. I don't know why he would want to keep doing these movies like Jack Reacher. I don't know why. I mean, I know how a movie's shot. It's really long days. Mm-hmm. You're shooting half a page a day. You don't really see your family much. You're living somewhere other than where you are. You're living out of a hotel or whatever. He's got so much money. He's got worldwide fame.
I think it's
what's
good.
Driving him. Is it power? Is it the need to stay on top?
You know, it just hit me. It's good. You know the saying, it's good to be king.
Yeah.
He's kind of...
He's the king.
He's royalty. He's a king.
He's a king of Hollywood. He is royalty.
It's good to be king.
What's interesting to me, though, is that it's hard to... It's pretty lonely, I would imagine, up there.
Well, of course, as Shakespeare said, you know, lonely is the head that wears the crown. Of course, I'm not quoting him correctly. But, you know, so...
But why impose that on yourself? That's what's interesting to me. It's such an interesting thing. The guy obviously has so much trouble. Well, yeah, that's a whole. But there are signs. I read that book, Going Clear, which is very good by Lawrence Wright.
Yeah, Lawrence Wright.
And he does it's an expose. Yeah.
He's a very good guitar player too, Lawrence Wright.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a jazz guitar player.
Well, it's a really good book and stuff. I'm not as critical of Scientology because I think there are a lot of religions that you could really be. I mean, at least Scientology isn't blowing buildings up and shit, you know.
Sure.
And I think that Scientology, this guy David Miscavige, I guess, who's the head of Scientology, I guess he doesn't come out looking very good in this book.
No.
And I don't.
A bully.
Know, but at the same time, you know, I think that I know a lot of Scientologists. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care. You know, I maybe there's weird stuff about it and stuff, but if it helps people, you know, there's stuff that helps them. Fuck it, you know, let them do it.
Absolutely,
it's more of a philosophy. It doesn't sound like a religion, but blah blah blah. But also, it's just like it's interesting how people will impose certain things on themselves. Where I guess they get so responsible to the machine that's around them,
absolutely,
that they kind of have to stay on top.
Sure,
and that can be a prison in itself.
Absolutely,
you know,
a lot of people depend on him. A lot of people, studios, they come to him. He's contractually locked into doing things, and it costs. You know, I think he feels an absolute, what's the word?
Responsibility.
Responsibility. Thank you.
Yeah. That's maybe. Maybe there's something else driving him. I just think it's important to take an inventory for yourself of why you're doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
What is, you know, it goes back
and
to
does
that
it make
thing.
Me happy?
There's a desire. Mm-hmm. Human beings always have a desire, but that is not the same as their need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a desire for money and fame and pussy and whatever it comes with. That's not actually what you need.
Mm-hmm.
You need something quite different.
Absolutely.
I would argue you need connection. You need to feel like you're growing. You need to feel like you're being creative.
Absolutely. Challenged,
and maybe
loved.
Tom Cruise gets all that. But I just noticed that his movies seem to be not only very difficult to shoot because they're done in these short pieces and stuff, but he is doing a lot of the same thing. Maybe he's having a blast. Mm-hmm. And he makes good movies for what they are.
For what they are.
I like that guy. You know,
yeah,
I,
for what they are. Yeah.
But I'm just using him as an example.
And he has talent. I mean, you know, he definitely has talent.
He's talented, yeah.
You know, he's done enough stuff that even doing the, you know, whatever, Jack Reacher movies and the Mission Impossible movies, whatever, he's done enough stuff as a legitimate actor that he's earned, personally speaking, he's earned my my respect.
Yeah, no doubt.
So,
who do you think is the best actor working today?
Daniel. Oh, gosh. I would say the three, I would say Daniel Day-Lewis, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Brian Callen.
There you go. That's exactly the answer.
And by the way, not in that order.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Absolutely.
I am between jobs right now. I like to take long periods off between jobs.
So does Daniel Day-Lewis. 5 years he took off, became a cobbler.
There it is.
You know?
I might just become a cobbler.
Why don't you become a cobbler? Or you could become a Keebler elf.
Give a fuck about other people's shoes.
You could become a Keebler elf.
How weird is this? He's such a weird guy. I'm going to be a cobbler. All right, dude.
Yep.
Go cobble.
I'll
go buy my shoes over here.
Yeah.
Because the world doesn't have a shortage of shoes.
I would love to see you get a huge role and then stay in character the entire time like Daniel Day-Lewis does.
There's not a fucking shot I would do that. My buddy, I did this movie, and Bruce McGill, who was in Lincoln, was, you know, and I have a point of view on Lincoln, but he said...
who won that war?
Exactly.
I didn't see the end of it.
And Bruce McGill was like, well, you know, on set, he would only talk to you, Daniel Day-Lewis, about events as they occurred in 1865. Mm-hmm. And it was very quiet on the set, you know, and it was all business.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg and everybody's in costume. Hey, all of you, go fuck yourself, including my favorite actor, Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't give a shit about your dumb fucking movie or your... It's not a dumb movie, of course. He's a great director, but I was like, God, they're all in costume. And I can just see that they're all, I could swear to God, I could see through the acting that they were all really uncomfortable and afraid to fuck up. I swear to God.
They were
all taking themselves so seriously. Hey, can I have some fucking humor?
Yeah.
Can I have some humor somewhere?
Yeah.
That guy, you know.
Yeah, that movie needed you. You would have pulled out your iPhone 5. And walked up to Daniel Day-Lewis and badgered him until he acknowledged.
He would have been,
I don't know what that device is that you have in your hand.
He is amazing. I'd be in awe. I am in awe of Daniel Day-Lewis. He's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But I didn't really watch the whole movie. And I didn't watch the whole movie because I was annoyed at the, I felt like there was
The preciousness.
Yeah.
The precious.
Yes, sir.
The precious.
Yes, the music, the costumes. Yeah. I just don't care.
I actually loved it, and I loved James Spader in it.
James Spader is great.
He was great. He brought a whiff of, like, sort of comic relief, humanity. Not that there wasn't humanity in it. I mean, look, he's a, you know, but... Yeah, you know, you need comedy.
I think so. I think everything should have comedy. I think everything should have fucking
comedy. You need
comedy. I really do.
Yeah.
Honestly.
The two Greek masks for theater are tragedy and comedy.
Yeah.
And tragedy is not a bigger mask than comedy.
No.
They're both together.
No.
And that's why Shakespeare is, for my money, the number one artist of all time. I'm talking about music writing. I'm talking about whatever type of creating you're doing.
Well, when you talk about the 10 most influential people of the millennia,
right,
of the last 1,000 years,
are you on that list too? Or have you made that list?
I'm not yet.
You're like 12. You're like 12.
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
That's actually something you think about, like where I go, I kind of go, gee, I'm not leaving much of a mark, but I'm doing the best I can.
I think about that, and I put that thought out of my head because the mark you leave, by the way, it's not up to you to judge the mark you leave. That's not what you're here for.
It's true, bub.
You know what I mean? If everyone else,
that's a good point.
All the people that you touch and you give love to, and I had a good spat with my dad the other night. A good spat. I mean, a drunken spat in a bar. And this is no bullshit. And my dad kind of stormed out. And my girlfriend said to me, "How dare you? How dare you insult your father like that?" And I was trying to prove my point and that I was right. And she goes, "I don't care if you're right. Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right?"
That's interesting.
And a guy came over. Because I was loud and drunk, and we were in a nice place, and he, swear to God, this is exactly the way it happened. I didn't tell you about this.
No.
A guy came over, and he said, "I've been listening to your shit for the last hour. Shut the fuck up." And I looked at him, and I took a beat. and I was a little drunk, and I just looked at him, and I went, give me a kiss. Give me a kiss. Come on. Come on. Give me a kiss. Come on. Come on. And he fumed, and he went, you're a fucking scumbag. And he turned around and walked away and went back to his table.
Wow.
Yeah. And the next day, Susie said, do you remember what you said to that guy and what he said to you? And I was like, I'm a little bit of a blackout, but I think I was asking him to kiss me. Yeah, I that was my only response, was to not get bigger and tougher than him, but to kind of,
that's funny,
almost emasculate him by asking him to kiss
me. That's hard to fight back. That guy, yeah.
I'm like, I didn't get the shit beat out of me. Yeah. Seriously.
Was he a tough guy?
I don't know.
Yeah, you can't tell.
Oh, he belongs to the New York Athletic Club, so I doubt it.
Yeah.
Although there have been a lot of brawls there lately.
Yeah.
In the paper.
Irish and Italian guys.
And they work out, and then they get drunk up in the bar with their jackets and ties on.
Yeah.
There was a big thing in the news this week about it.
I believe it. I have no doubt. There's a lot of aggression in that era, man. Those are tough guys.
Absolutely.
Basketball players playing ball. And they're all
lacrosse players, rugby players.
Ex-athletes. Yeah.
There were very few cops and firemen in that club.
Oh, is that?
Yeah,
it's
expensive.
Have more money. Okay.
It's expensive, yeah.
Well, they're the fucking worst. Wall Street guys.
Exactly.
Okay.
Wanting to be tough.
Yeah,
wannabes.
Ex-athletes who are
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, please. I mean, I went to that boxing match at the NYC. It was just literally like just a bunch of thugs.
Oh, God. With neckties.
Know. Yeah. Well, Jim, I think you and I need to go and eat.
We're
at 34 minutes. And
may I say one more thing? Robert Ingersoll, son, and the book is called Robert Ingersoll and American Free Thought. I highly recommend it because I've never read a book that lauded a man for his speech giving. He was a lawyer. And he gave speeches, and he tramped around America, and he was so great at his speech. I'm going to give you the book.
That's gutsy, too, doing it back then in America when you can get shot for being an atheist.
80% of the people that came to see him were people that didn't have his beliefs.
Yeah.
But he was so clever and so funny. There's comedy.
Yeah.
So clever, and used comedy to not only diffuse their hate for him, but win them over.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the book, and they give you excerpts from his speeches.
Comedy, and getting your way. Flattery,
yeah.
Comedy,
yep.
Choosing not to meet Lockhorns,
exactly.
Especially with another
exactly.
man, but rather kind of stepping. It's like a boxer says: it's not how hard you can punch; it's where you punch from.
Mm-hmm.
And
not getting punched,
and not getting punched, or not not necessarily. You don't have to enter the fucking ring.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have to enter the
that's
arena
right.
a lot of times. It makes no sense to. And a lot of times he doesn't want you to. All you have to do is diffuse it with one
exactly.
little thing. And
you're,
all of a sudden,
by the way, you
changes.
Are a pro at it, and I have to tell you,
yeah.
So am I.
Yeah, you are.
I've noticed that you're a pro. One other thing, my grandmother on my mother's side used to say to me, Jimmy, don't be a fighter, be a lover. And I go, Grandma, and she say, your grandfather never gets into fights on my mother's side. She said, because he would solve things with a little savoir-faire.
Yeah.
And I went, oh. And that always stuck with me, because if you get down into the trenches and get into the ring and you get down to people's levels and you start swinging.
Yeah, but first of all, there's no upside. You're either going to get sued if you knock them out, or you're going to get knocked out.
Right,
or
you're
going to
get hurt. Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Or worse.
So walk away with a smile and a grin and wish them the best.
There is a time to fight.
Yeah.
There is a time to fight.
You might have to protect yourself if somebody comes at you or
a
loved one.
You might have to protect somebody. I love your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Where you were getting
oh
fight,
my god!
And your aunt fainted.
Oh my
and
god!
She, and everything went to there was holy shit. She's fainted. The ambulance and everything else.
I was in the face of a pretty big guy who ran a club downtown, and he was the manager of the club. And we were face to face, nose to nose, and I was really big, kind of rough Hispanic looking guy. And all of a sudden, I see my aunt just fall to the ground. And my problem was I didn't like the way the waiters were treating my mom and my aunt in this club. And my aunt all of a sudden faints to the ground. My girlfriend at the time, my mother, we all got. And the guy goes from wanting to beat the shit out of me to, hold on a second, I'm going to call 911. Everything's going to be okay. We're going to take care of her. Now he was on my side.
Yes.
And at the end, I hugged him for helping me with my aunt and the and the ambulance came, and we put my aunt in the ambulance. She told me when we got to the hospital.
She was faking.
She was faking it because she didn't want me to get into a fight
that
with
is
the guy.
That's the power of a smart woman, brother.
I couldn't believe it.
That is a fucking great technique.
She goes, I saw you were going to get into a fight with him. I didn't want you to get into a fight with him. So I just pretended I had.
I love that about women. Women are like, what?
Exactly.
Fight him.
Fighting.
What do you mean punch him in the face? Exactly. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, and I'm like, fuck this. You know, it's just so in our DNA. And when women, a lot of times women will be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Almost every
Almost
every fight I've gotten into around one of my girlfriends, they look at me afterwards and they're like, you're a jackass.
Oh, dude, when I was probably 17 and this cop came in with a Glock, a gun on his side. And I knew what kind of gun
it was.
Oh,
I thought he came in with a clock.
And a Glock. And he had this gun. I go, that's a Glock. That's an Austrian-made Glock. It was when they first came out. And
right.
I was like, that's made of like
they
Kevlar.
They were the badass guns.
Kevlar. And, it can get through you know.
Kevlar and
metal
bamboo.
Metal detector and all this shit. My mother was like, what are you talking about? Who gives a shit?
I love your mom.
Like, what are you talking about?
In a very high voice.
Who cares about what kind of gun that is? How in the world are you even thinking
about
that? But that's the difference.
Right.
You know?
Well, you were talking about it like it was a Maserati. Like it was like the coolest
thing. I literally am always thinking of how do I protect myself against the barbarian hordes?
Yeah. You have that much more than I do.
I've always had it. Yeah. I want to be armed, and I want a high position, and I want scouts to tell me where they are, when they're coming, and I want to get them before they even form up.
Funny quick story. Brian and I have known each other for a year, and this is many years ago, and we're
we've known each other 20
years.
Well,
20 years, but a year into our relationship, our bromance, we were at a bar, and three kind of big drunken Italian guys were getting closer and closer to him, and he didn't see them. They were behind him, and I made him kind of, you know, because we're basically the same size. I'm about 2 or 3 inches taller, and much stronger. And I said, Brian, come on, move over here. I said, these guys are getting a little. And so I said, yeah, I just want you to get in. He's like, what are you worried about? I go, I just didn't want them bumping into you and then there being a problem. And, you know, and he's like, dude, he's like, look, I've never told you this, but I'm a black belt in Taekwondo. And I also fought for many, many years.
Well, I was a wrestler.
Right. And you're a wrestler.
I mean, I'm not a tough guy, but at least
but you can handle yourself. Exactly.
At least I was.
And I laughed.
Yeah, because you thought I was this, like.
I thought you were this little svelte little fucking actor pussy.
Which I am.
And I thought, you know, being from Brooklyn and, you know, being in many bars and you had grown up in the Philippines, I thought, you know what, let me take care of him. Let me, you know. And I said, you're so full of shit. He goes, no, I'm not. I said, all right, we're going to meet tomorrow at the boxing room of the 63rd Street Y. You better know Taekwondo because I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Right.
I said, so you better know it. And as I was walking,
we wrestled, I think, didn't we?
Well, we didn't do anything yet.
Yeah.
I was walking up the stairs to go up into the boxing room, and out of the room, I heard thwap, 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 and I'm like, it sounds like someone is in the boxing room hitting the heavy bag with a bat.
Well, I was actually fighting. I think I was still fighting. Like I was still traveling.
Taking full swings with a bat. I stick my head in the door, and there's Brian doing these roundhouse back kicks into the bag.
Yeah.
And the bag is shooting up into the air. I was like, what? I was so happy. I was like a kid on Christmas Day. My friend is throwing these spinning back kicks. I didn't know that he had this in his fucking back pocket. I was so happy.
Yeah, well,
and then we sparred a little bit and we wrestled.
I think you hadn't wrestled.
Exactly.
You can sure as hell look tough to somebody who played basketball and didn't do anything.
Yeah, right. I'm an athlete.
You can look. Yeah, you are an athlete. Yeah. You can look much tougher than you are, and that's probably what I was doing. You know, it's so funny to even talk about. I never tell anybody about Taekwondo because of MMA now and just all my friends that are just killers. And,
yeah.
So I always feel. Although Taekwondo is making a bit of a comeback. Vitor Belfort just knocked out Luke Rockhold with a wheel kick, with a legit wheel kick. Legit.
Yeah, there's a place for it.
Dude, no
there's
doubt. It can surprise it. The shit out of you. Back kick, wheel kick, roundhouse. Not even good, Muay Thai. You can, if you know
good striking.
Distance. Yeah, man, good it striking. Works. It works. I've Absolutely. Seen a lot of guys go out, and I'm seeing more and more of it in the UFC. It's pretty yeah. wild. So this is the thing. I mean, I think you're going to start seeing more of those sort of You're gonna all the arts are incorporated. I mean, Leona yeah. Machida is a karate guy. In fact, you know, GSP started as a karate guy.
Yeah,
so still uses roundhouse and stuff. Anyway, what a world, man! What a world we live in. What with so much access? You know, you and I are old enough to remember. You know, when we didn't have any of that access. When mm-hmm. if you had to look something up, yep. you had to use an encyclopedia.
Absolutely.
You had to use the Yellow Pages.
Britannica.
And now it's
Encyclopedia
now it's
Britannica.
Google. Now yep. it's on your phone. Now yep. I'm sending videos.
Yeah.
It's so exponentially different, and
yes.
it's only going to get crazy.
Our younger listening audience, you don't understand what it was like. And I'm so glad you brought that up.
But we didn't have... answering machines.
A guy.
You want to
yeah,
talk
oh,
about
yeah.
being ancient?
The first thing I ever had was a beeper.
A beeper.
You know, I never had a phone.
But I remember not having an answering machine
yeah,
in 1985. Yeah. I didn't have a fucking answering machine.
Dude, when I moved to Hell's Kitchen out of college, I didn't have an answering machine. I didn't have a TV. They were already invented by them, by the way. I didn't have anything. I used to listen to a transistor radio. You guys know what the transistor
you've
is?
You just got an iPhone.
Yeah, I just got an iPhone.
You just got a cell phone.
I just got a cell phone.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, exactly.
You've always
but
been
I went
about,
right to the iPhone.
You've always been about 15 years behind.
Yeah, but you know what? It is a tool, and I've had a computer and stuff like that. But there was a guy who just recently died. His name was Herbie Aid, and he was 71. And he died last year, and he was my kind of street mentor. And Herbie was Google before Google.
Yeah, he knew everything. He was a modern day Fagin. Wasn't
yeah,
he was like from Oliver.
He would get up early. He never held a job. He would get up every morning. He was half a con man. He was, he was a user and abuser, but very, 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 very funny. And I had a lot of love and a lot of fun with the guy. but. If you needed to know something, or he also had the most incredible memory I've ever met on anybody.
Yeah. I know. He remembered everything yeah, about our first
conversations
time
yeah. and where you were and what you did. It's almost like he had what autobiographical memory that what's her name has.
Mary Lou
Henner, who I yeah. met, and I went and she, I bought her book and she signed it. And I was really, that's another book, but that's an amazing I mean, do you know that she can recall every single day of her life?
That's so crazy.
Where she was and what she was doing. Really? Every single day of her life, all the way back to a small child.
That's so wild.
And she says that it actually comes from practice. She was taught by her father to anticipate a memory coming up.
Nuts.
Think about it. Experience it. And then think about it the next day and days after
wow.
that. And so that you're really... You're mapping it out.
I don't give a shit about memorizing every day of my life.
I got enough
mental.
But the good things.
I'm learning. I'm getting really good at allocating my mental space. Like I'm become pretty good at like being disciplined about what I think about, which is mainly like a script or my mm-hmm. sets, mm-hmm. my stand up. By the way, for you guys, I'm gonna be in Washington D.C. this weekend at the Improv. That's the 30th, May 30th, and then May 31st, the 1st, and the 2nd. I got four shows, Thursday through Sunday. So come out, man. It's going to be great. I hear it's an amazing room. I've actually done the room before a long time ago. I can't wait. And so it's at the DC Improv. Come out. And then after that, June 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd, I'm going to be at probably my favorite place to perform of all time, which is the Fort Lauderdale Improv. The Fort Lauderdale Improv is just ridiculous. It's such a blast. It's the greatest thing in the world. So,
I got to come down there and catch that.
Dude, you got to come out. Yeah. You should actually come because it's my greatest shows, but more importantly, the people are amazing. That Cuban kind of wonderful Latin vibe.
They love to laugh and have fun.
I love them all. Yeah. I love that culture.
Yep.
I love everything about them. So I would recommend. Anyway, but if you're in Fort Lauderdale or this weekend, if you're in D.C., come out and come see me, man.
Go see Brian. You'll laugh your asses off. I saw him on Monday night up here in New York. He was fucking hilarious.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Hilarious.
Fun. Jimmy Burke.
My bubba.
My favorite guy in the world. We're going to go eat some food now.
I love it, pal.
Let's
love you.
Let's drink some wine.
Let's drink some red wine.
And that's it. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for listening, guys. Robert Ingersoll, American Free Thought.
There it is. Words from Jimmy Burke. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.